I'm in the Mid-Cities area.
You're in the area, Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yep.
Okay.
So Mike Church, good to see you. Friday.
Always good. It's always good to see you. Wait a minute, we forgot the accoutrement. You know, we were jostling about this on the Twitter yesterday about smoking cigars while we were doing this. And I'll just show you if you're watching. I got a Fuente Black and a Fuente Green.
There you go.
Now these
ungrown
are double
and regular, right?
Sir, that's a cigar man there, dude. He knew. So the studio audience loves it.
Well, I'd join you. I've just never smoked this early in the morning.
All right. Well, then I won't compel you into it. So there, but just know that we have the sticks ready. Okay.
Smoke them if you got them, Mike.
They're ready to go. An interesting thing about the Sun Grown, I don't know if you're into cigar history, but the Sun Grown was on that island of Dominica where the Fuente plantation is. They can't grow wrappers. Wrapper leaf won't grow. But Senior Fuente figured out, in cahoots with Junior Fuente, they figured out how to grow a wrapper on the island of Dominica. And it's the only wrapper that's grown, and it's called a Rosada, a Rosada wrapper. I learned stupid things like this. I don't know why. And I carry them around in my noggin. But the Rosada wrapper is rare. It's rare. And it used to be, do you remember, have you ever had an Opus X?
Yes.
That has a Rosada wrapper.
Yeah. The Fuente have that. They have the Fuente taste. It must be that wrapper.
It is that wrapper. Now, they also use a Connecticut shave and a Nicaraguan wrapper as well. So Dr. Taylor Marshall here on our Free Phone Friday, and this is our second TriCast here. Now, are we live on your YouTube or just on ours?
We're live on my YouTube. I should probably say hello to everybody. Good morning, everyone. Happy Friday. I'm on a triple cast this morning with Mike Church, and we're going to talk about Trump, Vigano, the invisible enemy. Maybe we can even do we need to do a recap of this monumental week. I mean, it's church and state colliding in a good way.
Well, and it's church and state colliding and Archbishop Vigano suggesting that church and state collide as they should, yep. Which is when the church collides with the state and the church has a teaching authority, especially if she's defined something, then she's above the state. And this is what most people don't understand. And it's a fundamental, a fundamental issue, especially with Americans. You know, believe it or not, Doc, and I know you've been to Rome several times, the Europeans get this, which is why they subordinated their churches, why they wanted them under state control. Because the Europeans, those that are still alive and remember what Christendom was, they actually get this, and they don't want it anymore. In the United States, we don't get it. Your average American does not get that. They think that separation of church and state, well, you can't separate the two perfect societies. It's an impossibility.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Mike Church, you and I are citizens. We vote in all the elections, right? We're part of the state.
Right.
We also go to mass. We go to church. We're in the church. We belong to both.
Right.
How do we we can't separate ourselves. The whole idea that, I don't want to be a Catholic in the public square, or a Christian in the public square, that's an abomination. We can't have that.
And of course, the public square, this is we could talk about this all day. Why is it a public square?
Because that's where the cathedral was the square, the piazza.
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mike, you go to a great place like Louisiana, or you go to Europe, you go to a place that has Catholic roots. The middle of every city is a cathedral or a major church with a piazza. If you come to Protestant world, like some places in Texas, the town square is a courthouse and then the piazza, and there's no church. That's the Protestant way of building a town, is the courthouse is the center.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because there was a Black Lives Matter protest scheduled for one week ago today. Last Friday at Jackson Square. What's Jackson Square in front of? St. Louis Cathedral. What is St. Louis Cathedral? It is the oldest cathedral in the United States. It's one of the most. Did you get the chance to go when you and your wife came?
Yeah, we did. We did. It's great.
It's magnificent. That high altar is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Did you know when you, I think you and I were chatting about this, when you walked in the door, did I get you the message to look to your right, St. Joan of Arc, look to your left, St. King Louis the Ninth?
Yeah. I mean, it was very French. I definitely was picking up on all that. Yeah.
It's beautiful. But if you look at that square, that ginormous square there, that where they put where we put the statue of General Andrew Jackson, and it's there in honor of the Battle of New Orleans. People think it's there because he was a slave owner. No, it isn't, you idiot. It's there because of the Battle of New Orleans. And there's a great history there, a Catholic history, the Battle of New Orleans, that most people don't know. General Jackson came down, and at about this time, the mayor of New Orleans told the sisters, the Ursuline sisters, told the citizens to get out. They got word that the British were sailing up the Mississippi River, and he issued an evacuation. Well, Sister Saint Michelle said at the Ursuline convent, said, no, we're Catholic, we're sisters, we're not leaving. And some of our flock is going to stay. We won't leave. And they had, this isn't her, this is Our Lady of Walsingham. But, and I wish I had a little sweetheart statue, and I will get one. They had little sweethearts, what is known as Our Lady of Prompt Succor. Hmm. And our little sweetheart had already, she'd been named Little Sweetheart because she's a little tiny statue. Next time you and your wife come, I'll take you to the church of Our Lady of Prompt Succor. She's about this tall. And she was brought from France by Sister Saint Michelle. This is the famous story of the sister writing the Pope at the time, who was under house arrest by Napoleon. And she wanted to go move from France to New Orleans. And the bishop, and she thought her bishop was going to tell her no. And the bishop very craftily said, yeah, if you can get permission from the Holy Father, sure, go ahead. In other words, he knew that no letters were getting in and out. It's the only letter that got in and out that year was her letter. And the Pope wrote back and went, yes, of course, sister. And she had promised Our Lady that if that happened, she would honor her. And so she had this little statue made, Our Lady of Prompt Succor, and they called her Little Sweetheart. There was a fire in 1805 in New Orleans. It was headed right for the French Quarter, where the Ursuline Convent is. And the sisters got together, and Sister Saint Michelle led them in prayer, and asked Our Lady of Prompt Succor to spare them in the city. The wind changed immediately and blew this fire back out to the levees on the river. So when Andrew Jackson came, there was already a history of miracles from Our Lady in the city of New Orleans. She performed another one last Friday. No one is reporting this, Taylor. The lieutenant governor of Louisiana, Billy Nungesser, my friend Colonel Rob Maynard, who ran for the U.S. Senate here a couple of times, and I were agitating and were pleading with the city, with the mayor, and with the chief of police, lock up Jackson Square. They were tipped off that that Antifa was going to burn the city down, right? Some of us got together, and we prayed to Our Lady of Prompt Succor, Mother, spare our city. Spare our city. At the 11th hour, isn't that how she always works? At the 11th hour, 2 hours before the permit protest was to start, the New Orleans Police Department issued a statement saying, rules have changed. You're not allowed to come in Jackson Square. We're locking it up. Another little Our Lady of Prompt Succor intervening on the city of New Orleans, the cradle of Catholicism in the Mississippi River Valley, as it used to be known. And no one's reporting this because we don't report on we don't believe in miracles anymore. So
all right, so Mike, are you going to light that cigar? I'm going to talk about Trump and Vigano.
Let's talk about Trump and Vigano. Could I have a Lancero?
No, he's the Lancero. The Lancero.
I'm going with the Lancero. Let's talk about Trump.
Sophisticated.
Now, this is, if you're watching, this is our dear friend Matt Gaspers, a regular guest of yours.
Yep.
Matt's got a great intro to the Vigano letter. I know that you read it. I'll show you this on the YouTube as well. And Matt's prelude to that's mine.
There
that's an El Rey du Corona Lancero, ladies and gentlemen. Matt's intro sets up what's about to happen with Archbishop Vigano. I didn't get a chance to watch your last show on it, but you got 300,000 views, so you must have said something really, really important. Can you give my listeners and your listeners and your viewers a recap of what your take on the Vigano letter was?
Yeah, two big items. The first, I think everybody caught on, and that is Vigano is telling President Trump, you know, Trump, that there's an infiltration in America, in your own party, and to a certain extent, in your own administration, there's an infiltration. But there's also an infiltration in the spiritual realm. And so this is kind of a moment where there's a spiritual leader. I don't know if there's anything like this in the history of the United States, where an archbishop gives a warning to the president, and the president not only receives it, but then tweets it, endorses it to millions and millions and millions of people.
So, 70 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great moment for Catholicism, but even better, Mike, is a great moment for people like you and me who are traditional Catholics. He's not retweeting Cardinal Supich or Cardinal Tobin. You know, he is retweeting one of our guys. So it's a great, great moment. Now, the other thing that kind of, the reason that video went to over 300,000 is that Archbishop Vigano, in the letter, a little bit over halfway down, he warned the Pope and he used a Latin phrase, a Latin inscription, Solve et Coagula. Now, a lot of people just went over that. I don't know if this is true, but when Glenn Beck read the letter, he just skipped that part. He probably didn't know what the Latin was or how to pronounce it, so he just skipped it. But this term, Solve et Coagula, is an alchemy term. It's an occultist term. It's Latin for solve, which is where we get the word dissolve, to break apart. Coagula is where we get the word coagulate or congeal.
Congeal.
So in ancient occultism, which is all based on the myth and the lie of alchemy, because, you know, Satan, he wanted to take his own angelic nature and elevate it to become a god. So it's the myth of taking something lower, like lead, and turning it into gold.
Alchemy.
Alchemy, yes, which is Satanism. It's taking nature and trying to make it divine. So in alchemy, there's this principle. But also there's the famous drawing sketch of Baphomet. Do you know what I'm talking about, Baphomet?
Absolutely. I know Baphomet with the horns, the whole shebang.
Yeah, he's got, he's androgynous. He has women's breasts. He has a phallus with serpents going around it. He has a goat head, a pentagram on his head. He has fire on his head to mock the apostles on Pentecost, the moon. But the key to it is on his arms. People probably have never looked closely. On his right arm, he has a tattoo. It says Solve. And on his left arm, he has a tattoo that says Coagula.
I never saw that.
You never saw this?
No.
Well, it's on my. If you're watching on my channel, you can see it on the screen. Maybe I can send it. If I send it to you, Mike, can you put it on your side? You have that technology?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, I'm going to send it to you on Skype real quick. I'm going to send it in the chat because people on your side need to see this.
So what we're doing here with Dr. Taylor Marshall, so it'll just go when it shows up as a file. I can just correct. I can just segue to it.
Let's see if this works.
He's talking come about over to you? I'm not seeing it. Justin, can you find a picture of Baphomet?
Yeah, just Google Baphomet, put him on the screen. You can even get a close up of his arms. So what's going on here is Vigano is tipping off the president. Not just like, hey, there's a conspiracy or something like that. He's saying, look, this is deep satanic occultism in our midst. He even uses the word Freemasonry. People want to laugh him out of school for that. But he is talking about the infiltration. I wrote a book last year called Infiltration, The Plot to Destroy the Church from Within. And Vigano's read it. He's endorsed it. He is tipping off the president of the United States about a plot to destroy the church, to destroy America, and destroy the civil governments, to solve, divide them, dissolve them,
right,
and then recongeal them as an atheistic, communist, globalist empire in which we will all suffer. And it's not just political. This is spiritual, as Vigano stresses. This is satanic. This is Satanism. You know who else has a tattoo of Solve et Coagula on her arm?
Mariana, Marina
Abramovich. No,
it's Marina Abramovich.
No, it's not. It's J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter.
Oh, does she?
Yes, she does. Well, and then someone told me, I haven't verified this yet, that Marilyn Manson has the same tattoo. So this is occultism. This is magic. This is alchemy. And, you know, it's everything about Freemasonry and occultism is taking the myth, taking the false theology, and then applying it in your time, whether it's 1789, French Revolution, or 2020, where you take the myth of alchemy and you're like, we are going to destroy America, we're going to dissolve it, and then we are going to recongeal it as something that is anti-family, anti-life, anti-God, anti-Christ. Right.
Now, you think about this, you mentioned the French Revolution, and it was a revolution against the church. The French Revolutionistas hated the Catholic Church. You got to know that. But you think about it, how did it get started? The tennis court oath.
Yes.
This was a handshake.
It's all in the tennis court.
Louis XVI said, okay, I hear your problems. All right, I was a bit of a jerk in that. I might have, you know, I might have pushed a little too hard. So he says, he gives in. This is why if you deal with these people, when you're dealing with evil, if you give in anything, if you give an inch, it's over. You're compromised. You're going to lose. They are going to, and they will not stop. You know, I have this soundbite that I play from time to time from the movie The Terminator. This is what's going to happen to you.
It can't be bargained with. It can't be reasoned with. It doesn't feel pity or remorse or fear. And it absolutely will not stop ever until you are dead.
I mean, James Cameron is the biggest heretic apostate that there is. But, you know, I have this theory that the Holy Ghost doesn't ask permission for things. Right. He just kind of puts them in there. But he's, you know, what's also amazing to me, and it's Mike Church Show here in our TriCast with Dr. Taylor Marshall on his regular Friday broadcast here. What is fascinating to me about this is they keep doing this. People keep describing what's going on using demonic terms. Yeah. And I'm listening to them going like in a total secular fashion. They think they're talking about aliens, you know, the big conspiracy that there's a cabal and there's someone at this evil force that's at the center of it. Go like, yeah, it's called Satan. And they describe it in the exact terms you and I do, but they can't make the leap. They can't make the leap that you're talking about demons and you're talking about the ringleader, Satan, which is, I know you had Kennedy Hall on your show. I don't know if you got a chance to read his book, The Terror of Demons, but in chapter 2 is the best explanation I have ever read about the Garden of Eden, man, woman, and how Adam failed his wife. And what the devil was really up to, which is kind of what you said, which is we can be like gods. Really? He didn't tell us that.
Yeah.
You know, it was my friend, our mutual friend, Michael Hitchborn, says this is the world's first transition. Satan was the universe's first transitioner. You shall be like gods. Yeah. Well, you're human. You can't be like a god. And you're an angel. You can't be like God. So we know then that this transgender madness, this is straight up evil as well.
Well, I mean, and Baphomet, who's kind of referencing this whole thing here, he's a transgender. He's got female breasts, male genitalia, and after doing some more study, one of the arms, the artist said, is supposed to be a male arm, and the other arm is a female arm. So he's a mix of a goat, and a human, and an angel, and a man, and a woman. It's just a trans party going on. He's got all LGBT, LMNOP, all within himself. And this is the icon of occultism, of Solve et Coagula. And I just think it's amazing, Mike Church, that in 2020, we've got Archbishop Vigano, the guy calling out McCarrick, the guy calling out bank scandals, the guy calling out Cardinal Worrell, corruption.
Pachamama.
Calling out all this stuff. And now he's writing open letters to the president, and the president's not only receiving them, but endorsing them. I mean, when all everything happened with McCarrick in 2018 and Vigano popped into the scene, everybody was like, V is for Vigano and pumped about Vigano. Did you ever imagine that Vigano would be in the political sphere with Donald Trump in 2020?
No.
It's amazing.
No.
It's amazing.
I never imagined that a Catholic outside of Melania Trump would be in the political sphere with Donald Trump. And I think this is the fascinating thing. I don't know about you, but when I see FLOTUS, First Lady of the United States, by the way, totally unconstitutional term, don't use it. When I see Mrs. Trump, no titles of nobility, okay? Now, I'm not opposed to them being a fan of Isabella and Ferdinand and monarchy, but the Constitution says what it says.
What if we just use we didn't say first lady, we just use like Italian, or we just prima donna or something like that.
Prima donna, prima donna, you're the prima donna. But what I see in Melania, she's graceful. I see Mary. I see a Mary Ann. We know she has a rosary. We know she prays it. She gave it to the Holy Father to bless when he tried to give her a plastic souvenir Vatican one when they met in 2017. She went, no, I have my own.
BYOR, bring your own rosary, right?
Yeah, bring your own rosary, right. We know that the president has a statue of St. Michael on his credenza. We know that there is now a statue of Our Lady of Fatima in the White House.
Correct.
So for the first time, Taylor, for the first time since Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, I assume she was praying a rosary, we actually have the wife of the president of the United States actually praying a rosary in the White House. I take a little solace at that. Do I think that she's telling the president to do, you know, Catholic things? Well, I'm sure he gets some advice from her, but it doesn't matter to me because there's a grace. Yeah. She's bringing a grace in the White House. So we know that a lot of the attacks against President Trump, they are demonic because look, you know how you know that grace is there? Because where do they concentrate their fire? Where does every Satanist, where does every demon, where does every hater of Catholicism and of the good, the true, and the beautiful, where they're all laser-like focus on, who do they despise most? Donald John Trump. And by the by, Don John, there are four great Don Johns. Now there's five. Now it's Don John of Manhattan, or since he moved, I think it actually sounds better, Don John of Mar-a-Lago. I like Don John of Mar-a-Lago.
He's like in a leisure suit in that one.
It is kind of a leisure. Have you been? Have you seen it?
No, I've never seen it. I've never been invited.
Well, I haven't been invited, actually. I kind of drove past it once. It is stunning. Mm. It's stunning. It's so beautiful. But you know what? It's typical Trump, though. There's not a 40-foot-tall wall with razor wire around the top. It looks like you could. No, it looks like you could just walk right in. So I take that out of that. Let's get back to Archbishop Vigano and this letter that he wrote to the president. Is it possible, though, I think this is the operative question here. Is it possible that Vigano, with all the graces he seems to have these days, and with his St. Athanasius-like appearance now amidst all of this tumult and apostasy and things that we see coming from other Catholics, is it possible that he actually, maybe it's been revealed to him, that he actually thinks that President Trump is probably as Catholic as anyone else that has power in the world, and that he thinks that good things can actually come from him? Or why else would he write the letter?
Well, let me tap the brakes on that. I think we need to be very careful and not say, well, Trump's a crypto Catholic and he's a Catholic. I don't know. I mean, not everything.
I don't mean that he's a crypto Catholic. I think that he appears as he's as Catholic as you're going to get in this world.
Well, boy, I'm still praying for a Louis the Ninth.
Tap the bake.
I'm still praying for a Louis the Ninth, great French monarch. I got a video, great French monarch. I'm hoping out for a great French monarch. Maybe he'll come out of New Orleans. Maybe the great French monarch will come from New Orleans. I think what's going on here is when you read the Old Testament and you read the New Testament, what do you see? God, do the great revolutions in piety and great spiritual awakenings in ancient Israel happen through the high priest and their excellent preaching? No. It comes from the peripheral. That's something I know that Francis likes to say, but it's in this case, it's actually true. He chooses the Judith. You know, he chooses the Esther. I can see, you know, in the way you're talking, you know, Melania is that kind of figure. He chooses the Daniel. He chooses people who you wouldn't, he chooses Peter. So these are the people that God chooses, and great, you know, spiritual things happen, and renewals and conversions and repentance and, you know, the Cyrus and the Constantine and the Clovis and the Charlemagne. And, you know, you just go through history and it's the unusual suspects that God chooses. And I think we're in a case right now. Do I think that Trump could and will become Catholic before his death? I think that's probably highly likely. I think he has an affinity for the Catholic Church and he sees its magnificence and its order, because he's a man of efficiency and order.
Yes, he is.
And so I think he sees all that, and so he has deep respect for it. The problem for him in converting to the Catholic faith is that the Pope is a communist, and his cardinals that he's appointing are communists, and the clergy, well, not the clergy, the hierarchy, the bishops of the United States of America and the Catholic Church are almost to a man, minus a few, count them on one hand, liberal, pro-socialist. They are apathetic about pro-life issues. They are apathetic about defending traditional natural marriage. They're apathetic to all these things. So I think Trump looks around like, you know, he's a businessman. He's like, you Catholic bishops and you Pope, you say that you're selling Coca-Cola, but out of your car, you're selling Pepsi. You're horrible businessmen. Your branding and your marketing are all confused and messed up.
So he looks at it as he sees through the mind of the man that wrote The Art of the Deal.
Correct.
And he goes, like, you know, what is it? I'm a Trump fanboy from way back. I bought the book when it came out in 1987. Wow. I went through my stuff. I thought I still had the copy, the original first printing. In any event, one of the chapters in the book, one of the things he says is stuck with me. He goes, like, if you go to sell, he goes, most of what business is common sense, and people don't get this. He goes, I went to Wharton Business School. I don't use hardly anything that I got in Wharton Business School. I went because my dad wanted me to. He goes, what I use in business is what my father taught me, what Fred taught me. And he goes, most business is common sense. For example, say you have a used car you're driving, and you want to sell it as a used car. Do you park it in front of your house or on the lot, all dirty, covered with dirt? You know, some kid went on there, wash me, with his finger in the dust on the windshield. Or do you
French fries and the floorboards?
Right. And, you know, half a Big Mac under the left front seat. Or do you go and wash it, vacuum it, detail it, get it looking as nice as you possibly can, then put the for sale sign? He goes, just common sense.
Right.
And one of the things he said, and I think he does this as president, and he has a simple rule, and he said this is in chapter one of The Art of the Deal. Protect the downside, and the upside will take care of itself. Mm. If you protect the downside, the upside will take care of itself. And think about that. You and I are small business guys. We got to know where our weaknesses are, what the downside is. And if you're always looking, going like, okay, what's the downside? What can go wrong here? What can Murphy law me on this? And if you protect that, well, then the upside will take care of itself. I think it's the same way in governmental affairs, which is why government should do only about 3% of what it's currently doing. If you were to go back and look at the record, before the Federal Reserve, before that monster, the creature from Jekyll Island reared its ugly head, and the global oligarch cabal got its first big meat hook into the United States, gross domestic product spending of the United States Congress was a high watermark in 1866, 5%. 5%. Wow. Low watermark average, 3%. 3%. That's a federal government that minded pretty much its own business and did what it's supposed to do. I think in many instances, this is what Trump wants the federal government to do. But you can also apply this to Catholicism. Mm-hmm. We don't need the USCCB. My bishop does not need an organization to go have meetings and eat steak dinners with people that are running cover for sodomites. He doesn't need it. It is a structure that has been put on top of it, and it's made to appear as though. And why? They're very crafty about this, Taylor. It mimics our form of government. Top-down central authority, right? And you little people out there, you little rabble, yes. You can have your little parish if you want. But they want the central authority. Yes. I mean, it is an absolute mimic. The USCCB is a mimic of the monster that I call Mordor on the Potomac River that perches itself on the banks of the Potomac. By the by, in ancient, in the Old Testament, and in pagan rites, what's an obelisk? Is that a Christian symbol? An obelisk?
No.
No, it's not. When we think of Washington, Mordor, and the Potomac, what do we think of? Obelisk, Washington Monument. You know what I see? I see the Tower of Sodom. That's what I see. I see Lord.
That's an interesting point, because a lot of Protestants and evangelicals, they're in my audience and your audience too, they're like, why are you Catholics? I went to Rome. And there's an obelisk outside every single church. There's an obelisk outside St. Peter. What's the deal with that? Well, these are pagan obelisks. They even have pagan inscriptions on them, right? But at the top of every one, the Pope has a fit. They've been exorcised, blessed, and a cross has been affixed on the top of every one, which signifies the victory of Christ over paganism, over the nations. That's why it's there. It's a booyah. It's in your face.
Booyah. I like that. So booyah. Booyah.
Booyah.
All right. Mike Church Show, Taylor Marshall Show, simulcasting on three places.
We're Crusade. Simulcasting. I got about 2,000 people over here.
Wow. Well, maybe in a month I might get 2,000. So hi, 2,000. How are you? I'm Mike. He's Taylor. We're doing a tricast. We're live on crusadechannel.com. You said you want to do a recap of the week. Let's move to another subject. Gone with the Wind.
Oh yeah.
The revision. This is what communists do here, though. You could talk about Gone with the Wind if you want. By the way, to your 2,000, we're broadcasting Gone with the Wind on the Crusade Channel radio station tonight.
You can do that.
Start. Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm not gonna call HBO up and ask permission.
Okay.
People are going to get to listen to me renting it, and I did rent it. So, So I'm going to play my rental to the world, so anyone that wants to hear it at crusadechannel.com. But, you know, this is what communists do. Communists come in, and they say, you don't have any history. History starts today.
Or your history is evil.
Or your history is evil. Let's get rid of that. You know, when the Bolshevik revolution came in, people forget about this, in 1917, when Lenin went in there, what's the first thing that they went in there and did? They went after it. They got rid of the czar. What is the czar? The czar is a figurehead of the Pope, the head of Christian religion, if you will, Orthodox, Russian
right.
Orthodoxy.
For Russians, not us.
Yeah, Russian Orthodoxy. So to get rid of the Tsar, right? Tsar Nicholas is the last of the Tsars. What's the second thing that they do? They go in and they start saying all of the laws under Christianity are gone. You can abort, you can divorce, you can contracept, you can do whatever you want. So they start abolishing. They go, that was evil. That was holding you back. Mm-hmm. And then the revolution is on.
And they shut down the churches and got rid of icons.
That's right. That's right. So then you have iconoclasm, right? You have a great iconoclasm here. Then we have to replace things. So now we have to say, and this is what Black Lives Matters is doing, is trying to do. This is what Antifa is trying to do. Then you have these things that are happening. Let's change the names, or let's just totally get rid of them. So then you have St. Petersburg is changed to Leningrad. You know, you have the names of cities are changed. I mean, folks, when they start talking about you can't run that movie anymore and you can't use that term, like pronouns, I can't say he or she.
Right.
What can I say? Well, whatever they want you to say.
Sir.
Sir.
He and
right.
Sir, yeah. No.
These
thanks.
Are revolutionary acts. All of them. Everything BLM is doing, everything Antifa is attempting to do, And before that, they had paved the way with what? 60 years worth of revolution in the family. There's no, go to Black Lives Matter website. You can read it for yourself. As a matter of fact, I was reading it earlier. They're against fathers.
Yeah. I know. I saw that. It's crazy.
We reject the concept of the nuclear family. I mean, it says it on their website. And I'm reading this and going,
this goes back to the Baphomet. Solve et coagula. They can only build communism and atheism if they destroy the father and destroy the nuclear family.
Wow.
And look, they could only get Catholicism if they destroyed the format. What'd they do? They changed the liturgy for all seven sacraments. Do you know that, Mike? After the Second Vatican Council, they changed the liturgy on all seven sacraments. Why? Yes. Was it not working before? Did it need to be updated? No. Solve et coagula. Dissolve, rebuild, recongeal. This has been going on for 60 years in the States. It's been going on 60 years in the church. And now, Vigano is actually, I'm doing a show today at 2 Central, 3 Eastern. I want to invite everybody, where I'm going over Vigano in his thoughts on Vatican II. Have you seen that? You there, Mike?
Yeah, we got another. Yeah, I'm there.
Okay, good.
Did we lose you?
No, I got
you.
I'm here. I'm here.
So we have another letter from Archbishop Vigano. This one where he says, okay, I'm out. I took all my chips. I was
are you
all
talking about
now,
the Vatican II one?
Yes. I'm taking my chips. I'm cashing out. I'm done.
He says, hey, I tried this hermeneutic continuity. I tried to make Vatican II work. He says that there's roots of, what's the word he uses there? Roots of deviation are in the documents. And this is pretty radical that he's saying this.
Well, now, you're the theologian, but when I started reading this, mm-hmm. on the feast of St. Ephraim, he wrote this. Reading this, I'm going like, I'm reading Rerum Novarum. I'm reading an encyclical.
Yeah.
But then towards the end, then unlike an encyclical, he doesn't pronounce because he can't.
Right.
But he does give advice that you might get in a confessional, for example. He gives you spiritual guidance, we call it. And I think this is something that has been sorely lacking. And I don't fault Bishop Schneider or Cardinal Burke or anyone, but this apostolic is kind of a homiletical, if you will, direction, the spiritual direction. This is needed. We're humans. We love learning by nature, by design. We love to learn. And if we're humble, if we're Catholics and we're practicing humility, we're trying to practice humility, then you know that anything that you hold, unless it's a dogma, that you have like what we call an opinion on something, that your opinion can always be subject to correction, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And what I read him saying, it's very lengthy, this, by the by, but it's worth the read. And you're going to do a show on it.
Three Eastern, 2 Central, I'm going to do a whole show. I won't read the whole thing because, like you said, it is very long. But he basically says we've had 60 years of revolution in the church. And he said, you know, when we had the Fourth Lateran Council and the Council of Trent, and the Council of Nicaea, no one talked about the post-conciliar era, the post-conciliar doctrine, the post-conciliar liturgy.
They never said the spirit of the Lateran Council.
Yeah, the spirit of Trent. No.
The spirit of Trent.
This council is unique because it is used as a wedge to bring in every vice. And now we've seen idolatry into the church. All religions are equal. Everybody, they're going to build this shrine, Abu Dhabi shrine. We got, you know, Abrahamic faiths coming. It's all bogus. Where is it where we learn Jesus Christ says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. John 14:6. Would that ever leave the lips of Pope Francis in front of a Mohammedan or a Jewish person or a Hindu? No. They're just going to hug and take photos together and give each other idols and, you know, memorabilia. That's what happens every single time. It's been going on since the 1980s.
Well, when you introduce... So Chris Ferrara has a book about the introduction of novelty, right? Mm-hmm. That these are all novelties. And once you start practicing novelty, then now any novelty can go.
Well,
you know, we have people...
When you got go Paul ahead. The Sixth introducing the Novus Ordo, from where the word novelty comes from. Paul the Sixth calls it the Novus Ordo Missae, the new order, the novel. Nouvelle Théologie, the novel theology.
By the way, what's on the back of a dollar bill?
Novus Ordo Seculorum.
A new order for the ages.
That's right.
And people go like, yeah, that's just a bunch of you Knights Templar weirdos. That's not what that means. The one eye, yes, it is. Yes, that's a Masonic symbol straight up.
Yes, it is.
So when people go, I believe America, I want my dollar bills. We ain't God, we trust on our money. I think on the backside of the money, it might say in God we trust. I don't know what God you're trusting in, because that's a single eye with a pyramid. That's a Masonic symbol. Mm-hmm. That's so the God you trust on the back of the money is the devil.
Mm.
That's the God you trust.
Yep.
But if I could drag you into this, because are you a native Texan?
Of course.
Okay.
Born and raised.
Good. Okay, good. Well, I'm not a Texan, but I could say that if I ever move there, I ain't Texas, but I got here as soon as I could. So that's how the adage goes, right? I'm not from Texas, but I got here as soon as I could.
That's how we accept our immigrants.
Okay.
But they have to really say that. See, right now we got people coming from LA, Colorado, New York, and they're all coming here
because
they can't get jobs and they have high taxes in their liberal state. So they come to Texas and then they vote Democrat.
Okay.
We're trying to get rid of those people.
I love the fact that Louisiana's next to Texas. I take great solace in the fact that the banks of the Sabine River, one side's Louisiana, mm-hmm. Catholic Louisiana, on the other side is Texas. Come and get them. You know, the cannon.
Well,
on
and
the
not only that, but your Louisiana butts up to the Diocese of Tyler, which is Bishop Strickland.
It does.
He's the bishop holding hands with Louisiana right there.
So just to go back to Gone with the Wind and the Southern Way for a moment. I don't know if you have this book. Taylor's audience, get this book.
Hold it in the middle. Hold it in front of your chest. There you go. Southern Tradition at Bay. Okay.
Richard Weaver. Okay. You know the quote. I'll give you the quote. Ideas have consequences. Mm-hmm. It's in this book. Now, this is one of the most magnificent books about the South ever written. And what you will find about the Southern tradition is antebellum. Let's break the Latin down. Ante before bellum war, before a war. Right. And we're being told now that you can't have an antebellum South anymore. You're not allowed to talk about it. That's why Gone with the Wind's got to go. Mm-hmm. Nothing good came of it. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, if it did exist, we're just going to erase it. We're Soviets now. It didn't exist, okay? Conform your mind to that reality. No, I will not. I will not comply. You know why? Because the Southern tradition, at the end of the day, was a Catholic tradition. Right. Weaver even says it, that the Catholics, though, got a little tainted by Protestantism. And this is one of the things that led to the diminution of the Catholic Church in the state of Louisiana. They got a little too comfy and a little too cozy with Protestantism, including many Catholics owning slaves. This is after papal bull saying you can't do it.
Well, you know who owned a ton of slaves in D.C.? The Jesuits.
Yes.
Georgetown almost went bankrupt. And guess how they bailed themselves out and kept Georgetown alive? They sold their slaves.
So now this is talking about a hermeneutic of continuity. Hermeneutic that. Give me some continuity on that. My point is this. You're a Texan. I'm a Louisianan. We got Alabamians listening and watching. Mm-hmm. We got Mississippians. We got Oklahomans. We got Arkansans. Florida. Corpus Christi. There is a mass on the Feast of Corpus Christi. Florida is named the flower of the New World. Flora. Wow. The flower. Did you know that if you live in Florida, folks, you live in a Catholic state. Yeah. St. Augustine, the oldest city in the United States, named for one of the greatest saints, a doctor of the church, St. Augustine, Florida. Our Southern tradition, is my point, is Catholic. And I will not disown it. I will not denounce it. And if you think that you can make me do it, I got an AR-15 and some rounds that says you can't. Come and try it. That's what. This is what we have to say as men. No more of this mealy-mouthed garbage. Well, I see they have a way. No, they don't have a point. You're misinformed. By the by, the antebellum South provided cotton, flaxseed, soybean, peanuts, sugar, corn,
tobacco.
We provided the agriculture that the carpetbagging Yankee, the abolitionists, were consuming. Did they say, I'm not going to consume any more sugar? I won't eat any more Louisiana sugar. Not only did they consume it, they consumed the taxes because they taxed and tariffed the South before the war. The point is, if you read about the South, actual history of the South, and by the by, where's the dividing line? They would call it the old Mason-Dixon line. Was the northernmost state. What did Lincoln invade? He invaded Virginia.
Yeah.
The Old Dominion. Now, it never was a Catholic colony. It was principally Anglican, yes. But there were Catholics there. But the Old Dominion was that state that stood in between Lincoln and the rest of the southern states. And when Virginia decided, when it declared that it was going to go ahead and secede, it only did so because General Meade had already crossed from D.C., into Northern Virginia and was assembling on the banks of the Rappahannock River. Now, I say all this as prelude. Get ready, folks. Get ready. If these lunatics, if by some miracle they're actually able to defeat Trump, we're going to wake up in a brand new world on January the 21st, 2021. You don't want that to happen. But even if Trump wins, look at what they're doing, and they don't stop. They take an inch, they keep it. They're coming. If you're working for a Fortune 500 company and you know that you know what Black Lives Matter stands for, and you say, "Well, I'm not doing that," they're gonna make you do it.
Yeah.
And if they find out that you don't do it, you're gone. You're gone. You are terminated.
And LGBT.
All of it.
Yeah.
So as Southern men, it's what we got to do, and you're already doing it. You have. What do you call your Republican? Inside the Republic of Texas.
The Republic. Was
it called? No. Marshallandia, Marshallfornia.
The Casa Marshall.
Casa Marshall. Well, I call mine Kinglandia. All right.
Oh, okay.
Okay, in Kinglandia, I'm with Dr. G.C. Dilsaver. I am the king. I am the bishop, and I am the philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
We have autonomy here in our house. This is what we have to do as Catholic men. Just what exactly what your guest, Kennedy Hall, says. Men got to start being men. You got to lead your household, and you got to treat that household like it's your country. That's your first country. Make free trade deals with the Marshalls.
Yep.
Make free trade deals with the Simpsons. Make free trade deals. Find men of like mind. Because there's going to come a point in time very soon, my friends, where you're going to want to know who your friends are, the ones that you can actually rely on in solidarity, and who your enemies are. Because everyone else is going to become an enemy because they will give in.
Yeah, they're going to come after us. You know, this is something that we need to learn. Catholics used to do this, Mike. We used to have communities, neighborhoods. We used to hire each other. We used to intermarry, and there were these great dynastic Catholic families, and that's all been shattered and broken since the 1960s. Catholic men, we have to work together and hire each other. Go to New York and go to the Jewish neighborhoods. They
yes.
all work and hire each other. Go to Utah. What do the Mormons do?
Hire each other.
They all work and hire and contract each other, and they build up a community where they all believe the same and can push forward their vision for the world. What do we Catholics do? Nothing. We need to do this. And I'm telling you, like you said, people are going to, if you're in these corporate jobs, I have friends that are in these corporate jobs that are corporate lawyers or whatever, and they have to do these stupid projects like, okay, it's Diversity Month, pick one of these causes and decorate your office. You know? It's ridiculous. How does that have anything to do with practicing law for a corporation? They are trying to push their agenda. The people at the top have already bought in, and they don't want to give any financial blessing to people who disagree with them.
You know, and if you're one of those people that has to decorate your office, and your boss comes in and he goes, "All right, that's it, you're done." What? You don't like my rebel flag? You told me to pick one.
I did Eastern iconography. Icons all over here. It's diverse. You know,
yeah, I got one for you that that you can use out there, guys. If you're actually listening, if you're watching, you're wondering, well, how what I do? Just pick all ancient Quebec, take the Carillon de Sacre Coeur, and hang it up. And you're like, hey, babe, I am all about French Canadian culture, and that is the flag of French Canadian Catholic. Don't tell them that. French Canadian Catholic culture, the Carillon de Sacre Coeur. It's a beautiful flag to begin with. As a matter of fact, we sell them in our store. So to your point, and you're right. That, now, some people would say that's nepotism. It's not nepotism. Nepotism come from nepa. It's either the Greek or Latin word for nephew.
Nephew.
Mm-hmm. So the king would get his nephew to do something.
Right. Or usually there was an office in the Catholic Church up until 1800s, 1900s called the cardinal nephew.
See?
He was literally the nephew of the Pope. Because the Pope couldn't have a son, some of them may have, but he couldn't have a son, so he needed someone who he knew amongst the cardinals would never betray him, his own blood. And so he was allowed to appoint one of his nephews as cardinal nephew. That's where we get nepotism from.
Now, I just offer a few suggestions on how you can start doing this if you're listening or watching at home. Mike Church Show, Taylor Marshall Show, CrusadeChannel.com, Taylor's YouTube page. Couple small things that you can do. Number one, Amazon is the enemy. Now, I understand it's almost impossible to avoid buying something from Amazon because they bought out so many things, and it's very difficult to actually buy around them. But one of the things that you can do, find a product that you like, and you go like, oh, I'm going to get it from Amazon. Don't do that. Try and find the actual product guy, the maker of the product, and see if you can buy it from him. You have a publisher. I know because I'm a self-publisher. When I sell to Amazon, I don't even want to tell you what the discount I have to give them is to get my books in their store. They are ruthless. They would put people like me out of business. If I had to rely on them, I quit. There's no way I could do it. Find who actually manufactures the product. Another thing, buy local, man. If you got a farmer that's selling farm fresh eggs, buy them from him. If you know a farmer that's growing produce, you got a farmer's market, shop locally. Get to know these people. You're going to need this. You're buying food from 1,000 miles away. Number one, it's not good for you. Number two, they had to put all kind of crap in it to freeze it and truck it to you. So, you know, just these little things that we can do to get back to what my friend Brother Andre Marie calls the census catholicus, that we see all of our life through the lens of our Catholic faith. And if you start thinking about it, you'll start looking at things differently, going, oh, I can't believe I've been doing this. Well, I need to stop doing that. Yes. And once you start looking through and for the census catholicus, it starts to dawn on you. And you know, when you start doing these things, they're not as difficult as they're made out to be. It's not that hard to avoid buying from evil people. Don't give clicks and hits to people that are evil. Just don't do it. You got a website you're going to? Go to Taylor's instead. Go to mine.
Well, this is the whole, we got to buy and contract with each other. So if you're a business owner and one of your Catholic buddies says, yeah, my son, you know, he's still in the faith. He's coming home from college. He's looking for jobs. You should say, give me your card. I want to talk to him. Maybe I can hire that young man. You need to focus and help build it. Because that young man probably has eyes for a young lady and would start a family and start having children and doing something noble, but he needs income. So we need to help one another and build a community just like the Mormons do in Utah and just like the Jewish communities do in New York. They build this whole society.
And we know that this works. Here in New Orleans, we have what's called the Irish Channel. It's a neighborhood was filled with Irish people. They built churches. They had competition. They were in competitions with the Krauts, with the Germans. Mm-hmm. And the German church within two blocks of Our Lady of Assumption, there is a German church. I can't remember the name of it now. Equally large and magnificent. You go like, this is 200 yards away.
Yeah.
Two magnificent cathedrals. How Germans, their neighborhood, Irish, their neighborhood. Look at the city of Boston. Yeah, and an Irish enclave there. Look at this, that dreadful movie by Martin Scorsese, The Gangs of New York. Hey, at least they had solidarity. You knew which gang.
At least they had a loyalty to somebody.
At least they had a loyalty. But no, I'm in total agreement with you on that. And it needs to be done. Yep. And there's no time like the present to do it. So seek that Catholic brother out. Look, I also have a simple rule. We're traditional Catholics. But I've started this year to try and train myself to say to our evangelical and Protestant brothers and sisters through baptism, are you a man or woman of goodwill? I'm going to pray for your conversion. Mm. I have to. Are you a man or woman of goodwill? I'll do business with you. I want to fraternize you. I want to be your friend. Let's be friends.
Yeah.
We have a lot more in common than we have that separates us. We got to stop this victimizing and demonizing. Well, you don't practice. Well, you know what? At one time, I didn't either. Someone reached their hand out to me. Our lady grabbed me by the back of the head and said, hey, knucklehead, you're not mine. You're not my slave. You need to be. We're all, even cradle Catholics, growing up in this culture, we were all at one point in time not the Catholics we're trying to be today. Well, say that about a Baptist or a Methodist or an Episcopalian, a high Episcopalian, or an Anglican, or you know, someone that's just I go to a non-denominational. Are you a man or woman of goodwill? Okay, let's be friends. Let's talk. Got a lot more in common than we have that divides us. And to tell you the truth, in many instances, when it comes to issues like creationism and abortion and homosexual marriages and what have you, many Protestants are rock solid. They don't move. They do not move.
Well, I mean, the stats and the polls is the evangelicals score more consistently when it comes to pro-life, pro-traditional, natural marriage and those social issues. They actually score better than we do.
So
Catholics score better than Catholics. I mean, but yeah, I mean, so, and this is what Vigano's doing with Trump. He's saying, Trump, you're not a Catholic, but I sense you're of goodwill and you're at least on the right side. He even mentions in the letter, you went to the March for Life. No president's sure ever did. Done that before. You set up a day for awareness to stop child trafficking. So he kind of gives Trump, here's the good things that you've done. And so I see in you a person of goodwill, and I'm praying for you, and I want to work with you on these common causes.
Fantastic. Well, that's all the time we have here on the Crusade Channel, because we have another show coming up. Dr. Marshall's going on at 3 Eastern, you said?
3 Eastern, 2 Central today. I'm going to talk about Vigano's commentary on Vatican II and how he's kind of changed his position and analyze that letter. So if you're interested in Vigano and Vatican II, you're going to want to be in that show on my channel here on YouTube, Dr. Taylor Marshall Show.
Dr. Taylor Marshall Show. Also tonight, we're running Gone with the Wind here on the Crusade Channel. I invite all of Doc Marshall's listeners and viewers, all of you wonderful people out there, pay us a visit at crusadechannel.com. Let's do some business. All right. And we would love to meet you, too, in our chat room. We have a wonderful little community there, Crusader Monastery. We pray together. You know, people send prayer requests in. So our Crusader Monastery prayer list is there in the chat room, where you could just send me an email, kingdude@mikechurch.com. Taylor, last time, one of the shows that we did, we had a little discussion about the Fatima prayer and about which was the right version and the not the right version. Well, we won't do that, but why don't we conclude today with the Memorare?
Let's do it.
In Latin? Good?
It's been a while since I did Latin, but I can pull it up and do it with you.
Okay.
Let me just Google it up real quick.
I say this one every day at the end of my rosary, and it's one of the first ones when I came back to the church in 2012. Mm-hmm. It's one of the first ones that when I committed I was going to learn all the good prayers in Latin. It was one of the first ones. It was hard to do. It's just not an easy prayer to learn. But if you can learn it in Latin, it's really beautiful. And, of course, it's written by one of the greatest chivalrous knight saints ever, St. Bernard of Clairvaux. Yep. You don't get a better pedigree than
that's
that.
That's great. Now, do you want to do the first half? I do the second half or do the all together?
I'll do the first half, do the second.
You want me to pick up at Ego Tali Animatus?
Sure.
Okay.
And I'm on a Patris Affilia Spiritui Sanctri. Memorare, o piisima Virgo Maria, non esse auditum me secula, quemquem a tua carentem praesidia, tua imperantem auxilia, tua potentem suffragia, esse de relictum.
Ego tali animatus competentia a te Virgo Virgina, mater curo a te venio, quorum te gemens peccatoris isto, Noli mater verbi, verba me dispicere, sed audi propitia et ex audi. Amen.
In nomine Patris, et Filii, et Spiritus Sancti. Always Amen. A pleasure. Always a pleasure, brother.
Yes, good to and see I want you. To ask everyone, please subscribe to both of our channels. Please share this video on Facebook. Please like it. Do all those things. Click all those buttons. Like, subscribe, share, all that. Helps both of us out a lot. And pray the rosary every day.
Pray the rosary every day.
If you don't pray the rosary, you're not on the team.
You're not on the team. All right, brother. Good to see you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. God bless. Right, Godspeed. Bye, everyone. All right. See y'all at 2 Central.
We'll be there.